the ideas, the leaders, the lives that are shaping Denmark and the world. From Blokstad in Copenhagen, Denmark, with your co-hosts, Ed Lay and Thomas Molhern, this is Global Denmark.
Welcome back to the Global Denmark podcast. Well, guys, we apologize for not having an episode last week, but like so many, we've run into logistical issues in light of the COVID-19 corona pandemic. Luckily, we were able to get Jessica Joel Alexander on the line from Rome, Italy, which is great considering they're in a full lockdown, but we made it work. We were very interested to hear what the situation on the ground was there in Italy, as it has very much become the epicenter for the pandemic after China, although that is a fluid situation. We also were able to explore what it means to be a parent in light of the new logistics with schools being closed down, distributed working, and the like. So really a great conversation and something that could be very useful. I know it was useful for me as a parent, and even if you don't have children, some of the issues we talk about, very insightful. So without further ado, we bring you Jessica Joel Alexander. All right, we are back, everyone. We are on the phone. Ed and I are keeping our social distance, so we're in different regions of Denmark, and we have a very special guest today. Our alumnus, Jessica Joel Alexander, has been so kind to call in from Rome, Italy. First of all, Jessica, before I bring you in, Ed, how you doing? I haven't seen you in a while.
Great. Up in Gilolai in the north of the country, I believe. We've just bought a dog, and we're homeschooling, home dog schooling, and just trying to create some structure in our day that doesn't have us pulling each other's hair out, and just pulling our own hair out and having lots of fun, really, as best as we can. I think Denmark's approach is really kind of allowing us to not stress, and seems to be allowing a lot of people to not kind of panic in this situation. But I'm really interested to hear what's going on in Italy, or more personally, what's going on for Jessica and family.
Indeed. Good to hear you are doing well there up in Gilolai. And as I said before, we are here over Skype with Jessica Joel Alexander. Jessica, can you hear me okay? How's everything going?
Yes, I can hear you. It's going well, all things considered.
Yeah, you're down in Italy, which has in many ways been the kind of the epicenter of the corona pandemic since it moved its way out of China.
Yes, it's been, I think, as it's been for everyone, slightly surreal. It obviously started in Lombardia, and I think being in Rome, quite a bit south, it seemed like, as I think it has seemed for many people, like it was sort of in one area and you didn't really think it was going to come to you. Even despite being in Italy, I don't know. I think there must be a human reaction to just believing that it's not going to spread to your part. And also, I think it took a while to sort of realize the scope and the magnitude of how serious it was. So they went on lockdown before we did, about a week before. And then, you know, it just all sort of happened very quickly. I mean, one day the school shut down and then other things were open and you could still go to the park and you could still go for a walk. And then then the gym shut down and then the pool shut down and then you couldn't go to the parks and then you couldn't go out. And then now I think it's you can't even go on your balcony if you live in the center.
Oh, wow.
And you can't exercise now. The only reason you can go out is if you have a dog. So speaking of a doggy boom, I think probably I think a lot of people are going to get a dog right now, because, I mean, there was even some people that were, and this is not a joke, that were walking fake dogs. They're really
wow.
People that have this fake dog walking around, and some people even got stopped for this.
You know, so, now that the stock market's plummeted, I'm just going to invest in doggy food.
Right?
The new doggy boom. How long have you guys been in lockdown there? We've been in lockdown basically since, I think, March 12th or 13th, about 2 weeks from this recording.
I mean, officially, I think it was just a bit before that, but unofficially, it started the week prior to that. So our schools already shut down early March. So, I mean, we're going into about 4 weeks soon. As I said, it's been progressively stricter. In the beginning, it was a bit looser. And then just every other day, it seemed like there were new laws in place. And I mean, you, in order to travel, for example, even to leave your house to go to the supermarket, you have to have a declaration, carry a paper with you with your passport number saying where you're going. And if it's not a good enough reason, there's a 3,000 euro fine now, and you risk jail time.
Wow. So that's severe.
It's pretty severe. And there's police, I mean, around the center, there's just police with megaphones telling people to go in their house. And it's a ghost town. Nobody's out. It's completely empty. So, I mean, it's also being taken very seriously by people now. There's a new level of gravity, I think, that's set in.
I wonder if Denmark are on the same course. I mean, we have a relatively relaxed lockdown here, which is gatherings of no more than 10 people. If you walk down Hellerup High Street, as I have done in the previous week, there's lots of people hanging around, and there's groups of three or four, and probably more people in the street than I've ever seen before because of these the school closures and things like that. And the UK has obviously moved from no measures to being closer to Italy's measures than halfway between Italy and Denmark. Are the government communicating with you statistics there of the spread? I mean, slightly different for every country and how it's spread, and the speed and density of population perhaps has a part to play in that. But
when it first started, it was because we were the first country, obviously, in the Western world. And, you know, we didn't know what to think because it's quite severe. I mean, of course, now it's happening a lot of other places, but it was quite severe, this idea to shut down a country. And it wasn't clear whether this was the right decision or not. And it was really just time would tell. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, when I saw the UK slowly, slowly, slowly changing its tune, you know, I think that's also part of the realization that this is serious and it doesn't know borders and it doesn't matter who you are. I mean, Prince Charles, right? He's got it now.
That's right.
And so it looks like now I think we're peaking. So last I heard, I mean, the death toll has it's gone a little bit up and down. But last thing I read, it was starting to peak a bit. But we know that the lockdown is not going to be lifted on April 3rd. They're not giving us a date for when it will be finished. Most of us think school will not be reinstated for the rest of the year.
Okay.
And I have a feeling this will continue for quite some time. Like I said, on the positive, it does seem like we're getting to a peak. Now, it hasn't gone down, but it does seem like it's not going up.
Okay.
To clarify the rest of the year, do you mean the rest of the school year?
Yeah, sorry, the rest of the school year. So our school goes to mid-June.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we were supposed to go back to school April 3rd, but that's not happening.
Oh, have they made that official yet, or is that just...
Yeah. They said that maybe 4 days ago, that they just said we're not going back April 3rd, but they didn't give an actual date of when we would go back. So,
okay. Now, Jessica, we have listeners that are obviously based around the world, and maybe you could tell us and tell our audience a little bit about what it's like when the health system is just completely overburdened and reaches that kind of that peak above the line of what they can actually take.
Well, I'm sure have seen it on the news. It's completely overwhelmed, the hospitals. I mean, the north, it's just a scene that's out of a bad movie. I mean, they're driving the dead away with army vans. They're piling gyms with corpses. I mean, they can't even manage how many people are dying. And 23 doctors die. The other day, a cashier in a grocery shop died. She was 48 years old from being exposed to the virus. So now the supermarkets, they were already very strict about social distancing, but now, I mean, the cashiers are sort of covered in saran wrap around the conveyor belt, and yeah, it's really scary in that sense. And I mean, how it affects me personally. Now, we're not in the north, so you know, right. In that sense, it's, you know, we're seeing this as well, like other people. But I mean, I can't go to the doctor with my kids. I can't go to the dentist because unless it's an emergency, it's you can't go. And my son has a cavity. So my dentist literally sent me a home cavity kit. She wants me to fill his cavity over Skype.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my goodness. You know?
Wow.
It's crazy.
Yeah, that's scary. Is, you know, and that's what everyone's looking at is once the whole health sector is just completely overburdened, the trickle down effect on that seems, you know, you're doing at home cavity as a parent over Skype. That's That's scary, actually.
No, I mean, as also as a parent, you know, I'm the Danish way of parenting expert, right?
Right.
And so I've always been very sort of, you know, you should let your kids be free and let them experience, you know, risk so that they develop coping mechanisms. And now when I see my son outside, he's going to climb a tree, I've gone from being the Danish parent to being the Italian parent. I'm like, no, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't break a leg, please.
Now, Jessica, you guys are obviously in basically complete lockdown now. Do you have any advice for our audience that are in other countries that aren't there yet, maybe in Denmark or in the United States or UK or, you know, different countries in terms of, was there anything you could have done differently? Is there any preparation now that you see the reality on the ground?
That's a good question. Something you could have done differently.
Should you hoard groceries, medicine, or I mean, what does it look like in terms of just the basics?
I wish there was more yeast. We cannot get yeast here to save our life, so that would have been helpful. I do think it's a good idea to stock some groceries, because right now it's such a pain to go to the grocery store that I go maybe once a week. And my daughter was saying the other day, it's like winning the lottery when I come home because there's food in the house, new food.
Yeah.
You know, so I have definitely stocked some things, whether it's pasta or flour, or I haven't gone crazy on the toilet paper. I don't know what's going on with the toilet paper in other countries, but
yeah, that's another podcast.
I do think it helps to have some backup, because it's also, you know, going to the supermarket is exposing you as well. So I think the more we've gone into lockdown, the more you really do avoid going out completely.
Yeah, I saw there was this thing that people were singing on the balconies, but what I'm hearing is you can't even go on your balconies anymore.
Exactly. I mean, it's very sweet that there's many, many, many balconies that they're hanging rainbows, pictures of rainbows that people are drawing, kids are drawing, that says andrà tutto bene, which means it's going to be okay. It will all be okay. And that's lovely. And Italians aren't classically known to be that united, but there has been definitely a sense of unison and community, and there's a lot of people doing good things. Taxi drivers are offering to take groceries to elderly people for free, and volunteers, lots of volunteers to help out with the healthcare system. So, I mean, one of the things I tell people also is this, as difficult as this is and as many negatives as there are, there's also a lot of positive things happening and positive things to focus on, you know, rather than just making it a negative experience.
So moving into people's houses now, and the intensity of having you and your children under the same roof and not really being able to move away from each other, how are you using your Danish parenting, and how are you applying that the day to day in such an intense environment?
So if you remember from our talk, it's the acronym is PARENT. Yeah. So that's play authenticity. I won't do the cheer for you.
Come on, once.
if we go straight to the R, which is reframing, that goes back to this, what I was just mentioning, that this is in overall, I mean, it's quite a serious anxiety-inducing negative situation for many people. I mean, it's really serious, and the gravity will hit wherever you are. Like I said, it took us about 2-3 weeks in before you really think, wow, this is serious. But on the plus side, as I mentioned, there's actually a lot of fantastic lessons. I mean, even if it's just the appreciation you have for things you didn't have before. And this is sort of guided by us as the parents. So we can choose to be really anxious or, you know, negative. And our kids will just feed on that. And that is exactly what they will mirror back to us. Or we can, you know, look, like, for example, we have a garden in Rome, which is just a huge luxury. And I'm so grateful for that. And my kids know how grateful they are, because some of their friends are living in these apartments where they can't go on their balcony for 21 days, you know, or the fact just having food in the house becomes something really, really exciting. My daughter, before, I was very strict about screen time, and she was not allowed to have a phone or anything like that. And now she has all this time where she works online with her friends and sees her friends. So for her, in a way, it's been a bonus. And these are the things that we can find that we can focus on, and that it makes your experience a lot more positive. Because the other thing I think is that when we come out of this, there's going to be it's going to be bad for a lot of people. I mean, just economically, the society, it's going to be heavy, heavy, heavy. And so the thing I keep remembering is that we're not going to get this time back right now. So all of this time with your kids, all of this time with your partner or whoever you're at home with, it's a gift. And it's the last time we're going to have before we live in societies that we're going to feel a heaviness we haven't ever felt before.
You know, it's really an interesting point. You know, I think what you're pointing at too is this, when you talk about having a growth or fixed mindset, you know, just looking at an event as either a path of limitation or a path of opportunity, and really taking this crisis and seeing it as, okay, what kind of opportunities does it present? And I think what you're mentioning is this enhanced gratitude for the things that one does have. And I can definitely feel that in myself. You know, it really, your world shrinks down and you look around and what is most essential? What am I grateful for? I can feel that. Absolutely.
Yeah, and it grows. But I mean, I have some friends that I've been speaking to who are extremely anxious and reading the news all the time and have the news on all the time. And, you know, I think that's got to be a difficult household to live in because it's scary. And that's where, again, I think we have an opportunity to be the lighthouse and shine it on something positive and all the great lessons that'll come out of this, or make it, you know, a four-alarm fire, which is going to be a little bit unpleasant.
So how does one then parent, you know, I'm talking to a lot of parents that have different types of arrangements where maybe they have two kids or three kids or one child, both parents are working. How do you parent in the, you know, the way that you mapped it out for us in the best way in this time when there's lack of boundaries, there's a lack of space, it's not ideal. How can you maintain quality parenting or even create new opportunities?
Well, the first thing I would say for sure is it's super important to have a routine because everything is out the window now. I think kids need it more than ever to have this, you know, routines help kids feel safe. It helps them know what's coming. It makes them feel more secure. And in the first week, and I've seen this across the board with parents in different countries as they've gone on lockdown, the first week it was, okay, we're waking up at the same time. We're going to keep this schedule. We're going to do this way. And then by the second,
the New Year's resolution where you're running.
So what I want to highlight about this routine is that it's important to have a routine in terms of knowing the basics of what we need to do, but you can be flexible. I mean, we're together 24/7 now. You have in many ways a lot more time than you did before because this stretches over the weekend, this stretches into the evenings. So we still have a routine, but it's a lot more flexible. So they're allowed to wake up a little bit later. They still do their schooling, but they have a longer break and they take a little bit more responsibility for their own. I mean, my son's younger, so I need to help him a lot, but I'm even working towards getting him more independent. And the more you have this clear routine that everybody knows, it makes the power struggles a lot less.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I've noticed just talking to clients and things I've been talking with them about is that actually the way that schools approach education is because of the large groups. It's probably the worst way to learn is to go, right, we're going to keep our children focused from 8 in the morning until 1 in Denmark, whereas actually something more effective is 20, 30-minute installments spread out across the day with, you know, sort of fun activities in between where possible. How are you approaching, with your younger son in particular, how are you approaching it?
Well, I think also for, you know, for all parents, it's every kid is different. So every child will need a different approach. And that's, again, that's actually a sort of opportunity we have right now to get to know our children's learning style in a way we would never know otherwise. So I will certainly come out of this with so much more knowledge about my son in particular. My daughter's very independent. She's 11. So she's fortunately, I don't even almost have to see what she's doing because she's so diligent. But my son, yes, he needs a lot of help. I have learned that he works much better in just what you said, Ed, these smaller installments. He really thrives on the attention. He's always had a little bit of issue with being distracted. So I've really seen how, like, setting up a really clear workspace for him, making it very organized, getting a lot of stuff away from his room so he has much fewer things that he sort of understands. I've seen him changing, really thriving, actually, in this homeschool environment, so much so, I mean, he doesn't want to go back to school.
You know, it's amazing too, and that raises a question. It applies both to, you know, the idea of an education, but also, you know, the distributed workforce compared to the traditional 9-to-5 job. Is this an inflection point where, you know, so many people can see opportunities or benefits from this kind of new way of working or being that there's really no going back or stopping this trend?
I mean, I don't know. It's so hard to see what will happen, you know, on the other side. But I mean, certainly it's made me reconsider my son's education. My daughter, she misses school. She, you know, she misses her friends and stuff. Again, it depends on the child. Some children thrive in certain environments. Some people don't, you know, like flowers, right? Orchids need completely different care than a dandelion. And if they get that care, they thrive. If they don't, they wither. I really see that in the sense my son is very, very sensitive. So I think it takes a week of sort of, I call it teething, to get through the first week of lockdown, where you sort of need to work out how it's going to work. And also parents letting go a little bit of all of their expectations and all of their normal hustle and bustle. I think the first week is almost, you're still clinging to, I gotta make it go, I gotta make it go, I gotta make it go.
Sure.
By the third week, I tell you, that's gone.
Okay.
I don't know what the fourth week
is. What does week 50 look like?
God, I don't know.
Obviously, I used to run an international school program, and I really think that, like you guys are mentioning, that there's so many valuable insights that parents are going to glean from their own children's learning style and how they thrive on this really unique scenario, that I really hope that schools, when they come back, instead of, oh, let's get right back to the curriculum in the traditional way, that there's really a debriefing period where right away that there's time for parents to really articulate what they've seen and how they've experienced their own children, so these lessons can be integrated into the teaching, because I think there's going to be just so much valuable data here that parents are attaining for the first time, maybe ever.
I think that's a very good idea. I agree. I hope so. And not just in education, but maybe also in parenting. I mean, I think it's a great opportunity for parents to do some introspection. And like I said, I mean, to be together this much for such a long period of time, you can only learn from it.
Your acronym, if I remember correctly, the P was for play.
Mm-hmm.
How do you encourage an environment of play in such a confined space? And maybe, Ed, you can hop in there too if you have any good ideas.
Do you know, I've seen a lot of people, health professionals and fitness professionals and dancers and yoga instructors, been throwing things online, and we've been alternating things like meditation and yoga and little workouts and playing with the dog, and we've been trying to make children move. Our kids move quite a bit between installments. Now we're up here in the country, it's easy, right? We've got a trampoline and we're running around outside and stuff, but they've been sleeping so much more deeply and longer. Mm. And like, they've been asking to go to sleep. Now that they're being stimulated every single hour, physically as well as mentally. And we see them progressing, as Jessica said, progressing in both areas. And I really hope that schools are able to take some of that on board as well. But over to you, Jessica.
Yeah, no, I think one thing is that for parents to remember that play is such an important need for a child. It's innate in a child. It's the way they learn naturally. I mean, children in war zone play, they need to play. So I would say definitely prioritize play. And if you're lucky enough to have an outdoor space, use it as much as you can. But I mean, for example, yesterday, my son spent an hour and a half playing in a box. And he was perfectly happy, and I'm sure he'll play in that box again today. So you don't need a lot of fancy toys or anything like that. You just need to really, I think, give them also the freedom and the space, whatever age they are, to use their imaginations, to be able to play, and play with them. You know, even if it's 20 minutes, it's not always easy for parents, but I always recommend try to do a little meditation, take a breath so that you can be with them. You can be present with them and leave any of these worries outside for a little while. And try to choose something you also like to play. Some parents think that they only have to play dinosaurs or something. And if they don't like that, I always recommend try to choose something that you can have fun doing too, because that makes it better for the child as well.
Yeah, and more authentic, right?
Much more authentic. And you can get into it. And it's good for us too to get into this state of flow where we lose sense of time and enjoy it. And it's really good for them to connect with us. Just prioritizing it. Again, all kids are different and there's so many varieties of kinds of play. Even they call it fluid play, this kind of play that goes from the virtual world to the real world is just as normal for kids nowadays. The play spaces are no different for them. So I think this is another interesting opportunity for us to see technology in a positive way, much more than we did before, because it's a massive help right now.
Yeah. Now, I remember that in your acronym, too, that T was togetherness and hygge. And I'm just curious, how can one attain that now? Obviously, there's the familial unit, whatever that may be, where you can encourage togetherness and hygge as part of your day. But how do you extend that virtually? Is there any tips or tricks there?
Virtually. Well, you know, my daughter has discovered Google Hangouts, so she can be on with a lot of her friends and they have a great time. My son even brings his friend around the house with the computer and he even wants to watch TV with him online. I'm like, maybe that's too far. And, you know, sit on the screen, watching a screen. But in terms of hygge for the family, actually, a really interesting discovery we've made is, so, you know, hygge is also about seeing the family as a team. And it's doing things together as a team. It's giving up the me for the we. I mean, this is one of the elements. And I have found through this that it's been a fantastic way, opportunity, because we're together so much, we've really gotten that much more that team feeling. So even something as like doing chores together, it's like we've gotten better at choosing a time. We all do it together. We make it more playful. We make it more hyggely. So I've noticed my kids have become much more integrated into the family team than they were before. I don't know. It became more hyggely or baking together.
Yeah.
Together. Getting back to the me over the we, just for a moment. How are both of you, I guess, dealing with work?
No, the we over the me.
Yeah, but flipping it the other way around, you've got personal time that's required for working. And, you know, are you adapting how you're both working? Are you working? Well, you're obviously adapting it, but are you working less? Are you choosing intervals throughout the day? And how are you separating yourself from your children to be able to do that?
Well, what I have found is, so again, after the teething week of trying to keep things the way they were and exactly in the time frame and stuff, after that, I discovered that if I give a lot of attention in the morning, and I mean full on attention where I really help with the schooling and I have to be there. Like if I'm even remotely anxious, my son puts his little hoofs in the ground and and won't cooperate. So I have to be completely present. And then I do that until about lunchtime. And then I take the time I need to work for a couple of hours. And then I'll work like on his bed while he's working so I can answer questions. And then my husband takes over and then I sometimes work in the evening or I get up really early and I do a few hours before the school day starts.
Yeah.
So it's been a little bit like that. It's like you're finding, but the most important way that I get that me time is by giving full attention for a period of time. Sure. Yeah. And then so they're much more willing to let you have it.
Sure. Yeah, so it is that agility, but also the teamwork and, you know, being present when you're present and creating that independence when you need it, right?
And how about you, Tolis?
Similar. Yeah, I think we have kind of shifts in place where, you know, I'll be there in the morning and do kind of educational like activities. You know, my daughter is only 3.5, so we're at the preschool level. So, you know, it's a kind of a different stage of learning, but I'm in a very privileged position, you know, now as a consultant where I've already been running a distributed workplace now. That's really hugely advantageous now in this environment that I didn't have to completely readapt my work model. You know, I'm in many ways very prepared for this. That makes my work time very flexible, so I can do a lot of things when my daughter goes to bed or, you know, my wife will step in. And we've already come up with a kind of a good rhythm here a couple weeks in. There's definitely a few days to kind of figure it out, but we're in a good place. What about you, Ed?
Well, I guess I'm probably speaking to 3 or 4 clients a day. And again, like Jessica, I found that it's about the intense attention. And as soon as you give lots of attention, rather than trying to give half attention while typing on your phone or trying to work, once you give that intense attention, you seem to, you know, be granted a lot of freedom as they want to run around and play on their own and have their own kind of creative space themselves.
Yeah. And, you know, my daughter goes in one of those force kindergartens or skolbrunner here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's wonderful and we love it. But, you know, she comes home every day at 3:30 and she's destroyed. I mean, just from the amount of physical activity. And now, you know, we've built in a rhythm where we can still walk and go to parks or the beach. And I just see so much better sleep. And also, you know, the intensity of learning because they're fully present and you're not with 20, 30 other kids. It's just a different ballgame. Her linguistic skills in both English and Danish are taking off. And this is no criticism to the institution, but it just shows you, you know, when if you can actually give that attention, you know, in a one-on-one or a very small group, what could that can do to the brain? It's amazing, actually.
I mean, if you think about it, you know, kids, particularly smaller kids, I mean, they love to be with you. You're the best person they can be with. So for them, this is a joy. And that's why I say we're never going to get this time back. We're never going to have this kind of opportunity to be together this much. So I think drink it in and enjoy it. And all those benefits that they will get. I've seen the same, the language improvement, the reduction in stress, sleeping. It's amazing.
Can I ask you guys a question in terms of communication and also tips for our audience? How are you communicating what this corona is all about to your children? Yeah, maybe that's just an open question. How are you communicating it? What strategies would you give?
Ed, do you want to go?
Sure. I mean, obviously, we're dealing with it how the country needs to deal with it based on the spread and obviously the opinion and what the healthcare service can do. So it's going to be wildly different, I imagine, for each country. We're just kind of talking about the science of the spread of viruses that we know of, mm-hmm. and why this is important. But we haven't really gone into the details of any horrific stories or anything. And we don't watch the news. We haven't done for 12 years. So we're just getting little bits of information from the government. You'll get a message from someone saying the Queen's online, maybe watch, or the mm-hmm. Prime Minister or whatever. But other than that, we're very much kind of treating it like we would a holiday. The kids are kind of used to both of us working in drips and drabs on holiday as well. So, and having moved here from the UK is not a very different experience to their everyday lives while we're on holiday.
Now, can I just cut in 1 second? Ed, did you say that you guys haven't really been watching the news for 12 years? Is that right?
Yeah, we gave up the news 12 years ago.
Do you think that's made an impact in terms of you being happier or less happy?
Yeah, disproportionately happier. The gain of not having the same story repeated. And I think that it's impossible for your brain to not take the individual story, because that's what they've kind of, the media has learned. When the Red Nose Day or the Children in Need switched from going, here are the statistics, to here's this one story about Pluey and his horrendous life. And obviously that doesn't change that thing. But the amount of fear that's put into you about this one individual story, it's impossible to not carry it with you. And everything that you see visually on a screen, it's impossible for you to not carry it with you. It creates fear within you that isn't helpful. We've removed that from our lives, and it did a lot for us.
Jessica, what are your takes on that?
No, I completely agree. We have the same rule. We don't watch the news. We watched the Queen's speech, the Danish Queen's speech. We turned it on for that and watched a little bit of Danish news. But otherwise, I completely agree with Ed. And I think in terms of talking to the kids, it's really just, I think it's really important to be as honest as you can, whatever their age level is. We talk about it, and we talk about it so sort of matter-of-factly without the drama. And without sensationalizing it. And, you know, we're doing what we can, and we have to be respectful of others. And yes, it's a serious thing. And I mean, of course, they feel that as well, because it's, you know, everything is shut. We've been home for 3.5 weeks. And it's important that they know. But this is, again, where I think our mood, stance, ways of describing the situation make a huge difference for them. I know for smaller kids, some people are talking about it as like fighting germs, because they don't understand the difference between fantasy and reality. Right. So it's sort of like the germs are the bad guys, and but they can't jump too far. So we're keeping we keep a distance so they can't, you know, get stronger. And we're all working together as adults to fight these guys. And, you know, there's age-appropriate ways to talk to them. I wouldn't answer more than they ask.
Yeah.
Because it's not necessary. And, you know, it's just that they feel safe and that they feel that they're okay. And, like, our state of mind and has a huge effect on that.
It's amazing, isn't it, how much children just look to their parents' reactions for that feeling of safety in these times. And I thought about it, you know, sometimes, I don't know if you ever have this experience when you're in an airplane and you're experiencing heavy turbulence. If you look at the flight attendants and they feel they're laughing and still fine.
Right.
That gives me great comfort. And then I try to take that metaphor to my children, you know, if they're experiencing turbulence, to where they're flight attendants. And if we can keep calm and carry on, what a profound effect that must have.
Yeah. And I mean, it's okay to be honest in the sense of saying, yeah, this sucks in a way, right? Or I miss these things, or yeah, this is hard, right? And yeah, it is, I'm, you know, and have compassion, and we don't have to pretend it's all perfect, right? But definitely the sense that it's going to be okay. Right. And you're safe and we're solid.
Yeah.
I think that gives them a great sense of comfort, and then it gives them a freedom to still enjoy their worlds.
Jessica, you are American originally, or still are, I guess, forever. but we have on your passport. And we have a lot of Americans that listen to our podcast, and you know, they're in a way a little bit behind the wave when it started in terms of the Italian curve or the European curve. What would you say to them in terms of being in lockdown and staying in it? Because, you know, I'm talking to a lot of people that are really, they're already itching to get out of it. And I think President Trump is kind of saying that Easter, we're going to be out of this, and we're going to be, everybody's going to be holding hands in the church pews. Yeah. It's going to be a miracle.
It's going to be beautiful.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, that's the exact word. what would you say to that? I mean, has there been a difference in terms of actually staying in the lockdown?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, let's look at how much many politicians have changed their tune already over and over again. You know, if you just look at already, there's been a similar track for a lot of politicians, Boris Johnson, Trump, everything. You know, at first it was, oh, this is just the flu, go to work, you know, and then it was, oh, okay, maybe this is a little more serious. And, you know, it's hard to believe that America has gone into lockdown. I mean, I'm still shocked about that. I mean, I'm living in a lockdown, but I'm still shocked that America has gone into a lockdown. And
well, partially, I think, right? It depends on the state.
Partially. I mean, my family lives in Florida, so they've gone into a pretty strong lockdown for Florida. And then New York, obviously, and quite a few other states. I personally think he will change again. I think it's not going to happen. We're not going to be in church, everybody, on April, whatever Easter day is. So that's my suspicion, just judging by the numbers and the reality of this virus. Like I said, it doesn't know borders. It doesn't know time frames. So it's a little bit of a wait and see, which again brings me back to the original idea. It's like, you know, I've watched my family and my friends in the U.S. go through these stages, the exact stages that I went through, which is like, it's a little bit like denial in the beginning. And then it's what? Confusion. And then I think the next stage becomes a little bit of an acceptance. And when it gets more and more serious, hopefully it won't. But if it does, there, I think people start to get a little more of a sense of personal responsibility about staying home. Whereas now there's a lot of rebels still. We had that in Italy as well, because Italians are quite individualistic. I mean, Danes are much more, you know, I think you obey the rules for the common good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Italians and Americans are a little bit more like, nobody's going to take my rights.
Yeah.
And so that's why they had to get so strict, because we didn't have the sense of the common good. However, as the severity of it has really hit home, more and more people are taking it much more seriously. So I have a feeling that's what will happen in many states. And I just don't think it's going to happen for Easter, but who knows? Maybe the Easter bunny is going to bring some special eggs.
One can hope.
We've been very careful to the schools. Sent out an email on the Thursday a couple of weeks ago saying from Monday we'll be locked down. So we kind of talked about it and went and spoke to the children like straight away and told them that actually we were making a conscious choice that we were going to quarantine because we never want to give them the impression that the government can tell them what to do, right? We want them to understand that they are a complete choice, and our choice was to put the health of, you know, older people or people with weak, compromised immune systems first by removing ourselves from that equation. And I think those rebels, the ones that don't feel like they're in control of their lives for the most part.
And you know, that brings up another point for me, Ed, which is that this is for the people that are living in more individualistic cultures like the US and Italy, let's say. This is also a really good opportunity to instill thoughts about others and the common good and taking care of others in a way that we never get an opportunity to otherwise.
Yeah, it's really going to be interesting to see what kind of impact this has on the collective mentality in terms of, it's very difficult, I think, to be completely libertarian in a time like a pandemic.
I think that there's a lot of things that are going to come out, like the healthcare system and many other things that before were politically driven, but when it gets to be something real, I mean, the NHS came out of the war, right?
Yep.
So, that's right. I mean, I have a feeling, and frankly, I hope that it really makes us really look at the health system and perhaps make some revisions.
Well, I want to end the podcast on maybe a silver lining, positive note. I'm mindful of the time. But Jessica, maybe you could just give our audience one key parental tip. If you could kind of distill it down. I mean, you've said a lot of great things, of course, to keep going here.
I think I would say two things, but yes, I would say this time, what's going to come after this lockdown and what's coming after this period is obviously going to be difficult, as I mentioned before, economically, financially, etc. So I think something that could help is to try to look at this as, imagine it as the last time. So maybe this is the last time we're going to be able to homeschool our kids before it gets crazy out there, or the last time we're going to be able to cook a meal together before we hear somebody's sick and dying. I think sometimes when you really look at a moment, I mean, people who have cancer, for example, obviously they are much more able to take this perspective. And I don't mean to be grim about it, but when you think of it that way, I feel like it gives you so much more, such a more sense of enjoyment and gratitude, but just you take so much more out of it when you think, wow, like I said, this may be the last time and I'm never going to get this time back again. So that's one thing I would say. And then the other thing, maybe I mentioned it before, but I think it's really important, is as parents, we are the lighthouse for our children. So where we shine our light, their lives will guide towards that. So try to shine your light on the positive things in this negative situation. You don't need to negate the negativity, but this will help them become more resilient out of this rather than anxious. Those are my two things.
Well, thank you very much for that. That's a great way to wrap it up. And Jessica and Ed as well, I look forward to hopefully that one sunshining day where we can all meet in Copenhagen within 2 meters of each other and talk again.
Yay!
But until then, stay healthy, stay safe to you and your families, both you, Ed and Jessica.
You too.
And you.
And to our audience, you can now binge listen to our podcast all you want, I guess. So hope you enjoyed this, found it useful.
Jump over to Spotify. Opportunity.
It is an opportunity.
Sorry.
No worries. And if you like what you're hearing, leave a rating or review. That would be much appreciated. And until next time, see you on the GDP.
Are you getting the most out of your time in Denmark? Pick up the printed copy of the English language newspaper Copenhagen Post today to access relevant news and event information, guaranteed to enhance your working and family life.